With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, so in the aftermath of the Bucks' 48-25 win over the Falcons, there are some negatives to take out of that game, and that's what we're here for, to point out some of the things.
Did Tom Jones return to the podcast?
Well, yeah, I'm playing the role. Be like if he would turn to the podcast.
Are you spring-loaded for criticism?
That's an existential question, but yeah, I am kind of a little bit. At least I am today, and I want to talk about a couple things. Let's start with Ronald Jones. Now, last week, I thought this was like an overplayed question, right? What's up with Ronald Jones? And my sort of default answer was, well, nothing. I mean, he fumbled, right, in week one against the Cowboys, and they benched him. And Bruce Arians got to play psychologist and say, he didn't handle mentally. He didn't handle the fumble very well, but he, you know, can't put himself in the game. So, okay. And then Arians last week said, well, he's starting. And I thought, okay, well, that's Bruce, you know, coach him hard, hugging him up later. And he did start the game. He ran the ball okay. But then there was the play. Actually, there's two plays in this game that highlight the reason why you can expect going forward that Leonard Fournette is RB1. And not just because he was playoff Lenny and Lombardi Lenny. No, it's because Ronald Jones is a liability in pass protection. Now, we know he can't catch, right? But neither can Fournette, so who are we kidding, right? Neither one of those guys are here for that. Supposedly, Giovanni Bernard is. We'll get into that in a minute. But there's a couple plays of this game. Okay, so they were facing 2nd and 20 in the fourth quarter, okay? And the Falcons linebacker, Deion Jones, is coming, all right? So it's a blitz. Jones is typically assigned to the running back if he goes out on the pattern, whatever. So here he comes, and Ronald Jones sees him late, doesn't pick up the protection, dives at his feet. He just steps over him, and he slams Brady for a pretty good hard lick and a 7-yard sack, okay? And then they replaced Jones. Now, this is the thing that doesn't get me. It's 2nd and 20, so why is Giovanni Bernard in the game? I mean, that's a passing down. I think everybody in the ball yard knows you're not going to run the draw play to Ronald Jones, which is why they're probably coming. So, but on 3rd down, they go ahead and they put Giovanni Bernard in, and he catches a 10-yard pass, and then they punt. Okay. Now, contrast that with later in the game, all right? The Bucs are in a similar situation, except it's 2nd and 8. They're at the Tampa Bay 42. Jones comes again on a blitz, only this time Leonard Fournette stones him, just sticks him, right? And that allows Brady the time to deliver a beautiful 17-yard pass to Antonio Brown. And on those two plays alone, I'm sorry, but it's all about the GOAT. It's about protecting the GOAT. That's your season. That's your franchise, okay? There's just not enough difference in the two of them in terms of, you know, their abilities as far as running the football. If anything, Fournette's got a little better hands, although that's not saying much. But that's going to keep Ronald Jones on the bench. I just don't know how you put that tape on and feel confident that he's not going to whiff on a blitz on a free man and get your quarterback drilled. So there's a lot not right now. Now, I'm not saying they're giving up on him. I think they're going to need him before the season's over. Look, people get hurt at that position. We saw last year he got COVID. That's how Fournette got to play. Fournette was sulking. Maybe Jones will sulk. Maybe he won't. Maybe they'll go right back to him. But, man, if it were me, if I was coaching the team, and God knows I'm not, I'd have a tough time as long as Fournette was healthy and Giovanni was healthy and maybe even Keyshawn Vaughn. I'd have a tough time playing Jones right now. I just would.
Well, and we're going to get to Giovanni Bernard here in a second, but Ronald Jones career, and we've been, you know, we've been doing this podcast the whole time he's been with the Bucks for 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's been up and down. It's the inconsistencies in his game.
Yes.
That are either holding him back or, you know, why we keep talking about it. It's, mm-hmm. you know, he shows flashes of tremendous running.
Yeah.
He's had some games that have been fantastic. And then he's got other ones where it's not. We know he can't mm-hmm. catch the ball.
Right.
He's never been able to do that.
No.
But when you have Tom Brady back there, as you put it, your number one job is to protect Tom Brady.
Yes, it is.
I mean, you know, the five guys on the offensive line, the tight ends if you're supposed to block,
mm-hmm.
or receivers if you're in motion and supposed to block on a play, or the running back.
Yeah.
Protecting Tom Brady is your most important job, period. Because Tom mm-hmm. Brady goes down and Super Bowl's probably gone.
Season over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you may win some games, but I don't think anyone thinks Blaine Gabbert's taking this team to the Super Bowl. Bruce Arians would probably say differently, but he's probably the only
one. Blaine Gabbert thinks Blaine Gabbert is taking this team to the Super Bowl, but that's another topic.
So, yeah. You know, if you can't pick up those blitz pickups, if you can't read it, you can't see it, you can't make that block,
right?
Then it's hard for Bruce Arians or Byron Leftwich to put you in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you justify that to the team?
Well, listen, I think, and we know this about Brady, right? Brady won't play with guys he doesn't trust. He certainly won't throw him the football. So in as much as, you know, he's quasi-responsible in this, Jason Light hates hearing this because he is the GM, but, you know, he's responsible for guys like Gronkowski being here. Oh, how's he doing, by the way? Two touchdowns in each of the last three games.
Two tutties?
Two tutties in the Super Bowl and the first two games this year. He's averaging two tutties a game. He's on pace for 34 tutties. So you got that. Now, I don't know that Tom was banging the drum for Fournette, but he did pick up the phone when Leonard had an option and asked and said, hey, I want you here. We know absolutely that he asked for Antonio Brown, and he got him. Okay, so
we know he called for Giovanni Bernard.
And Giovanni, he wanted, I think they recognized, and he said that, you know, I got to have somebody that I can throw the ball to out of the backfield. I got to be able to check this thing down. I can't, you know, we can't be punting on third down all the time after third down because I have no one to throw it to. So in comes a proven pass catcher, you know, a friend of James White, like one of the best friends he had, James White, the guy from New England that was a Super Bowl MVP, I think. Or should have been. I mean, up there in that Super Bowl against Atlanta. So, listen, I think if the GOAT doesn't trust you, you're in a bad place. And right now, I don't know how Brady can put on that film and trust him. Now, the thing about Jones is, I can go through his history because, I mean, I've never seen a guy get drafted in the second round and then have 44 yards as a rookie. 44, okay? They didn't play him, all right? That's unprecedented. You know, you could, you know, a lot of guys get released when they're that overdrafted. And so, you know, you go from that to, okay, he comes back and, you know, in under Arians, he kind of improves. And last year, he absolutely would have been a 1,000-yard rusher. Doesn't mean everything was right with his game, but he was on his way to 1,000 yards and then he got COVID, right? He had that great game, you know, at Carolina, where early on, I think he dropped the pass, and then after that, he had the 98-yard run and so on and so forth. I think he had a fumble in that game. He came back. So he was doing great, and then he got sick, and then he got hurt in the warm-ups at Washington, and then playoff Lenny was born. And I always thought that Jones is a better back. I mean, I think Jones is a better pure runner. I think he has more speed. I think he's a legit game-breaker, but you can't play him in a pro game if you can't block. And he's just never sort of impressed me with, you know, his knowledge of the pro game. And I think at USC, where they never threw him the ball, where they just ran student body left and student body right, he used his natural talent and his instincts, which is the biggest part of the running back position. And he was just better than everybody. And he made huge splash plays. You know, you saw the explosives. And so somebody that wants a running back that can hit the home run, he was Barry Bonds. That's the guy everybody, you know, that's what attracted people to him. But as a football player, he came here, he was almost 20 years old. He's never really locked in to the pro game because I think When you get here, it's more than talent. That's the thing. Like, everybody's talented. I mean, everybody's, you know, an All-American, it seems. And the guys you play against are, too. What separates these guys, and we've seen it at the quarterback position, what separates these guys is how well they process information, how fast they can make decisions and the right decisions, and that includes your running backs in pass protection. You have to protect the passer because they're going to bring more than you can block with the five offensive linemen. That's the game. The game is pressure the quarterback because you can't hit them, you can't touch them, you can't hit the receivers. You better get after the guy. So I don't know. It was funny because we talked to Arians, and I mentioned the blitz pickup that he missed, and he goes, "Yeah, well, it speaks for itself, you know." He says, "Ro, that's his guy. He's got to get out of those type of situations." I thought he ran hard, protected the ball, but again, you can't have those mental errors. And he said, I like this quote, he says, "His mind's fine. It's just that his play isn't as good as it should be." So I don't know where Ronald Jones is headed, but I think it's going to be over standing over there on the sideline for a while.
So why isn't Giovanni Bernard playing?
Can't figure it out. Your theories, we talked about this before the podcast, are probably as good as anybody's, but I do know this, that, like, again, second and 20 is not a draw play. I mean, you know, the whole stadium knows you're going to throw the ball on second and 20. So to me, if you got a guy in there to be an outlet for Tom Brady as a running back or a pass protector, which he's very, very good at because he's done it his whole career, why isn't Giovanni Bernard in the game then? Why do you have to wait until you see the three on the yard on the chain gang? I don't understand that. He can come in the game when it's not third down. I think this is what Brady wanted. I think he wanted a guy that he could throw the ball to, but we're not seeing it. So,
well,
I don't know.
And to clarify, we were talking before the podcast, and I said, are they playing the long game with Giovanni Bernard? And my point being is it's a 17-game schedule. It's a long season. You're going to have injuries. And sometimes the fresher bodies at the end of the year can make an impact.
Yeah.
And as long as you're winning and Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette are running the ball well enough,
yeah,
are you holding Giovanni back a little bit? One, so he has more time to learn the offense.
Right.
But two, as you get later in the season, or maybe you're holding him for games when you're down in the games and you need to throw the ball more. But you're kind of saving him. He's an older – I mean, what, is his 9th, 10th year in the league?
Yeah.
You know, so why start putting a ton of wear and tear on him in week 1 and 2, particularly if you're winning the games,
mm-hmm.
and not needing – you're almost holding that weapon back. I don't know if that's what they're doing.
Right.
But when you start seeing 2nd and 20 and they don't have him in, and, you know, Ronald Jones missing blitz pickups and you don't have Gio Bernard in, you kind of wonder – is there something going on either in practice, or is he not healthy? You know, is he not 100%?
I think he's healthy.
Well, I mean, those are the questions that you start wondering, knowing that, you know, we thought it was going to be a huge part of this season was you finally have a running back that can catch the ball out of the backfield.
Right. Well, that's how they were going to get better. I mean, everybody says, well, we know every team in the NFL spent the offseason trying to get better, and we know which ones have. I mean, it's obvious, right? So how do the Bucs get better? Well, they get better with a guy that can catch the ball on third down or on second down or whenever he comes out of the backfield. That's what they didn't have, and now you're not playing him very many snaps. And, you know, he was in the game in week 1 during that 2-minute drive and absolutely beat his guy in coverage and caught 2 key passes during that drive for the game-winning field goal. So we saw him pay off right away. But it could be that it's a 17-week season. It could be that you know, he's still thinking and learning the offense. It could be any of those things. Or they're just trying to manage his time. But honest to goodness, if you're not going to put him in on 2nd and 20, I mean, that's as good as 3rd down, right? You're looking at 3rd and 10 no matter what you do. So it just seems to me if you're going to have a running back there anyway, you ought to have the guy that can block, that can run routes, that, you know, is a true pro, that's got 9 seasons. You know, not somebody like Ronald Jones who, you know, it's like Groundhog Day, you know. I mean, he wakes up, Sonny and Cher is on the radio, and he goes out, and it's like the first day of work. So it's just, it's not gone very well for him. And I think I think because of it, we're going to continue to see Leonard Fournette. And, I mean, I think, like I said, they love Ronald Jones's talent. They don't necessarily love the way he's playing. So that was one of the issues. The other one is that this Buccaneers defense is, while they scored two touchdowns, and you take that any day, any game of the week, because you got about a 90% chance of winning if you're, if your defense scores a touchdown, much less two, and we saw, you know, Mike Edwards do that with the two pick sixes. But everywhere else, if you look at their defense outside of run defense, and let's be honest, teams are just not trying to run, which is why they're second against the run. It's hard to look at this defense and think we're just not used to seeing these sort of numbers, okay? They're 31st. In sacks per game. They've got two sacks all seasons. And that's, you know, we've talked a lot about the front seven. We talked a lot about Shaq Barrett and JPP. We talked a lot about Joe Tryon, Shoyinka. We talked about those inside linebackers that love to blitz. And I thought Ezekiel Elliott did a great job in the week one of doing what, you know, Ronald Jones didn't do, which is blocking. Despite all that, they've got two sacks on the year, and teams have thrown it over 100 times. It's not like, and sure, have they thrown it quick? Are they getting the ball out faster? Are they throwing it to the perimeter? Yeah, they're doing all of that. Now, what Bruce Arians will tell you is, well, sacks are great. I mean, they had almost 50 last year. He's like, sacks are great, you know, but we're still affecting the quarterback. And that's true. Mm-hmm. To a degree, they are affecting the quarterback. And, Vita Vea has forklifted some guys right into the quarterback's lap, you know, where he just picks the dude up, throws him around into the quarterback and affects the play. We saw a couple of tip passes, you know, one that was intercepted. Actually, two that were intercepted because Shaq Barrett got one that was tipped by Vita. So it's not as if the front seven or the down linemen aren't getting penetration, aren't affecting the quarterback. They are, but they're not getting them on the ground, and they're giving up oodles and oodles of passing yards, you know, these first 2 weeks. I mean, I think, you know, they're one of the worst teams in the league in terms of passing yards allowed. So at some point, and look, it's not a surprise that the weakness, I mean, we've always thought, Gravedigger's nickname notwithstanding, that, you know, if the strength of the defense is the front seven, that means the lesser than strength is your secondary. And now you've got Sean Murphy Bunting hurt. The tackling was poor the first week. And I think they allowed too many plays in the passing game, you know, to Matt Ryan. So I don't know that those guys back there are playing their best ball. Now, again, you say, well, you know, Mike Edwards scored two touchdowns. He did. Give him that. I mean, he'll take the touchdowns any day. Give up as many yards as you want to if you can score on defense. But when you're going out to play the L.A. Rams and Matthew Stafford and the receivers he has with Cooper Kupp and the DeSean Jacksons and people like that, it's got to stop somewhere. I mean, because pressure, you know, sacks come when the quarterback has to pull the ball down. Sacks come when guys are blanketed back there. It was, you know, coverage and pressure work hand in hand. If you get pressure on the quarterback, he has to throw it too soon. That helps your coverage. If you got the receivers locked up and he has to hold the ball, that helps your pass rush. Right now, it's not working together. You know, right now, quarterbacks are way too comfortable back there and have thrown it 100-something times in 2 weeks. So something's going on. All right, let's stick to the NFL. And, last week was MVP week, league MVP week for Jameis Winston. It was really fun.
For what, 85 touchdowns, I think, for the season? Zero picks?
I think so, yeah. Five a game, so 5 times 17, something like that. And he was, you know, he was anointed the league MVP. And that was fun while it lasted for about 5 minutes. And then they had to play another game. I mean, I was saying it last week, and it looked good on Jameis. He went up there and he executed and he threw 5 touchdown passes. And I think he had like 94 yards entering the fourth quarter. He hit a bomb and it couldn't have gone better, right? You beat a Green Bay team. You beat the snot out of them, right, in Jacksonville. And we talked about all that team had to go through, getting displaced by the hurricane. This week they lost, I don't know, 7 or 8 coaches, you know, but they didn't lose Sean Payton, who presumably draws up the offense. So they go into Carolina, and look, I didn't handicap Carolina very much before the season started. I mean, I think Sam Darnold might be a little bit of an upgrade from Teddy Bridgewater, although Teddy Bridgewater is 2-0, thank you, in Denver. So maybe he got a raw deal. But overall, I mean, Matt Rhule, I think, is a really good coach, and they've added some defensive pieces. But my goodness, I mean, talk about shutting an offense down. And, oh, by the way, you know, we've seen Jameis have great games. He did throw for 5 touchdowns once when he was with the Bucs, but we've seen him not turn the ball over as he did in the opener. And then we saw what we saw Sunday, which looked a lot like the Jameis Winston we saw here too often, you know. Couple of interceptions, one that was just ridiculous. He's falling down, spins around, just kind of chucks it up for grabs. And I think Sean Payton had maybe his worst offensive production since he's been in New Orleans.
First of all, they had like 40 plays.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean,
it.
Jameis was like 11 for 22, and then if you added the rushes up, it was around 20.
Yeah, that was it.
I mean, that was it. That is very un-Sean Payton-like.
It is. They couldn't get the ball back, and they couldn't get a first down when they did. They went 3 and out all day. You know, so it was bad. They were bad on third down. They were really bad on first and second down because they couldn't make a first down. And Carolina, to their credit, they must be better than everybody thinks they are. They're 2-0. They could be 3-0 by Thursday and leading the division by a half game.
As the Bucs have to travel to Los Angeles to face maybe their toughest game of the season.
Yeah. So I mean, if you had Carolina, you know, if that was on your bingo card, congratulations. Because I didn't expect them to be, you know, to come out of the box like this hot. Now, maybe like I said, week one is a liar, right? And we said after week one, it was like, woo, watch out for the Saints, man. They just absolutely slapped the Packers around. Jameis is reborn, which, by the way, I don't know why he does this, but, like, he had, like, Jeremy Fowler or whatever from ESPN, like on his couch or in his home or wherever they do these interviews, talking about all his, you know, shall we say, unique off-season routines with his trainer, you know, doing stuff like juggling while he was, you know, being shown playing cards and he's supposed to memorize while he's focused on something else, whether it was the Ace of Spades or the Two of Hearts, which I would think has nothing to do with playing the quarterback position, but what do I know? And I just, it was too much too soon. Like, can you wait a week or two or, I don't know, maybe 10 before you start doing features with networks? Like, you've had one good game. So that was, I thought, disappointing for him to go out there then and play the way he did. But listen, I'm starting to wonder now, and it's only been, again, overreaction the first week, overreaction the second week. Somewhere in between is the mama bear, right? But is it reasonable to think that if they have many more of those games, and when I say many, I mean probably any more of those games, that Sean Payton won't turn to Taysom Hill and go, okay, big guy, it's yours? I mean, Jameis may not even be the quarterback by the time the Bucs get to New Orleans, which is weird, right? Because last week we had him as the league MVP.
Well, and if you know, Carolina's 3-0, and let's say the Bucs win this week at 3-0, and if they have a bad performance and are 1-2,
yeah, that's right.
I mean, if you're two games back of two teams in the division.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've lost to one of them.
Yeah, and you've already lost one. I mean, yeah, you got to think Sean Payton would be looking at least getting Taysom Hill some snaps.
Right.
You know, but, you know, one bad game. Aaron Rodgers had a bad game in week one. We'll see what he does. Now, we're taping this before Monday Night Football.
Right.
So we'll see what he does.
But think about what you said, though. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is allowed to have a bad game because we know what Aaron Rodgers is.
Correct.
What we don't know is what Jameis Winston is because he's not been a starter since he walked out of here with 30 interceptions one day. I've heard all the sound bites, you know, and I think it was probably not the worst idea to go to New Orleans and humble yourself and learn at the foot of Drew Brees and Sean Payton. But you know what? It's great to say. It's hard to do. And I've always said, I said this after week one, what happens if they get behind in a game and he has to try to bring them back by throwing the football? I don't know why the heck the Saints couldn't run, but they couldn't run anywhere. I mean, like Kamara was just a non-starter. He was zero, you know. And that offense has to run through Alvin Kamara. But he had no yards at all. And so, like, to your point, they didn't have the ball, much less a chance to do anything when they did have it. But I'm telling you, this interception he throws, he's falling down. There's pressure coming towards him. But before it gets there, he just falls down and chucks it up. And it's like, woof. 11 of 22, 111 yards. 11 of 22 and 111 yards. It's not good. Not good at all for a pro football quarterback. There's a lot of quarterbacks that got hurt yesterday, too. Tua cracked the ribs, right?
Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod Taylor with a hamstring. Who's the guy in Indy? Carson Wentz.
Wentz, yep.
Couldn't come back because of an ankle. He couldn't come back for one series to go try to win the game. That's how bad his ankle was. Or, I don't know, people might be questioning his toughness. I don't know which.
I tend to think it's bad.
Yeah, I think it's bad, too. So, yeah, there's just a lot of, you know, a lot of injuries and things like that. So it's going to be a fun week this week, though, man. We got the Rams and the Bucks.
Matt Stafford, Tom Brady. I saw a stat, I think the NFL's app notification today.
Yeah.
If Tom Brady throws 14 more touchdowns, he will have thrown more touchdowns in his 40s than in his 20s. He's only 44.
It's unbelievable. I'll tell you a stat, and I think Greg Allman might have come up with this one, that it's reasonable to think that if he stays on a pace like he's had through the first season and two games, that after 3 years, if he plays next season, and he's under contract, right? So if he plays three seasons, by next year, he could claim the Bucs' all-time passing yardage record in three seasons. Are you kidding me?
If he doesn't, you just put him in the Ring of Honor immediately. You know, no waiting.
Oh, he's going. Listen, the only question now is whether Tom Brady has a statue out, if he's the first guy to have a statue outside of Raymond James Stadium. That's the Ring of Honor is a given.
He brings a second Super Bowl home, it's done.
Oh, I don't even think he needs to do that.
I mean, I'm saying if he does, it's for sure a thing. It's happening.
If he brings another Super Bowl here, the statue is happening.
That's what I mean.
Yes. Oh, no question. He'll be out there, you know, with the quintessential pose or whatever that is, much like Manning in Indy, which is crazy, right? Because he'll be here all of 2 years. But yeah, you win another Lombardi. It's a lock.
Two Bardies.
Which, by the way, over the weekend I was watching ESPN. I was watching Countdown. They revisited a little bit late, but better late than never. I'm surprised no one did this. They revisited the whole Brady Lombardi trophy toss thing. And they were like, well, we've got one of these from Tiffany's. And, you know, we asked the people at Tiffany's what would have happened. And they said, oh, nothing. It would not have been a problem. Like, what do you mean? Well, because the silver football is sealed so completely. You know, that rests on that base, that there's no way it would sink very far. It wouldn't sink. And so they said, well, let's try this.
So the dive teams weren't necessary is what they're saying, Tiffany's is saying?
They're saying it would have been an issue, yeah. They said it would have floated. And I'm like, So credit ESPN. They went out on their little studio there that's on the East River, and they tossed it in the river, and it popped right. Now, they knew the outcome, and I'm guessing there were some safety boats around that we couldn't see off camera.
Or they had it in the water ahead of time, you know, just set it in there and let
go. No, they actually tossed it.
No, like I'm saying before they shot.
Oh, right. Like, yeah. Whoop, and then you look down. Yeah.
You know, now, you did some tests. You did some testing, you know. You put the.
Oh, it wasn't. Yeah, this was not his first dip in the water. I don't have any questions about that. They said they tested it in water in a tank before they threw it in the East River, but. Yes, son of a gun floated, man.
Well, I guess you're going to see it thrown all the time now.
Now it's just going to end up in the river. Now it's going to be part of the boat parade, and it won't need a boat. You just kind of float it down the river. You know, where's Lombardi? Oh, there it is. It's floating. See, it's right there.
It's got its own boat.
Yeah, it's got its own boat. Jumps in, jumps back out. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. I'm surprised we didn't think of that because I know some people around here that have a Lombardi trophy. It would have been hard for them to convince me to let me try to float it in a river, but I know a few people. In fact, I know one that has five.
I was going to say, I know one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he would have never let me take it, and I don't blame him. But I thought that was fun. So, we had a lot of college football over the weekend. What did you think of the Florida-Alabama game? Entertaining as all get out, I would say.
I was thoroughly impressed with Florida. Not just that it was 31-29, but how they were down early. I mean, you know, and still fought and came back. I mean, you know, you expect Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, they start getting up 21-10, two scores, three scores. It's like game over. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's first quarter. You just, that's kind of your mindset because Alabama's been so good for so long that for them to fight back and do what they do. I mean, it's a shame they missed an extra point, which then they had to go for two at the end. I don't care for the play call that much, but
neither.
But for Florida to hang in that game, I'm thoroughly impressed with that team and the way they fought and played in that game. I mean, I don't know. Can you? I mean, you know, yes, it's a loss and whatever else, but and I know they're not there for moral victories, but dang, that's a good team, better than I thought they were.
They were better than I thought they were. I don't remember seeing an Alabama team that couldn't stop the run, and Florida just absolutely ran it down their throats.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like you know, I felt like that was a positive that the Florida offensive line must be pretty damn good, and I think you can be pretty confident when you have that kind of blocking that maybe their identity, you know, is going to be running the football. Now, listen, I'll say it. I'm not an Emory Jones fan. I don't like his game. I think he's okay. He's going to miss throws. You know, he's a decent decision maker. I don't know. You know, I guess, you know, he gets him in the right protections and, you know, all that sort of thing. But, you know, I think Emory could take you to, you know, maybe an SEC game, title game. Maybe. Now, they're going to have to beat Georgia. And for my money, I think how this season plays out is I think Florida and Georgia is going to determine their side of the bracket, obviously. Georgia's going to win, and then I think Georgia's going to beat Alabama. That's what I think is going to happen. I don't think Florida is going to the SEC title game. I could be wrong, but it's all on that game.
I'm still not sold on Georgia's offense, although I think their defense is phenomenal.
Their defense is great, yeah.
You know,
they'll get better on offense, though, I think. I think as Todd Monken goes along, that they'll get better on offense. I think. I really like, I mean, I obviously know their offensive coordinator really well, but I really think he does a good job. Their defense, though, is for real.
Yeah, although you look at Clemson versus Georgia Tech and you're going, well, maybe Clemson's offense isn't that good. And well, we're judging Georgia's, you know, defense
true.
On.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what, they had a goal line stand to win 14-8.
Yeah.
Over Georgia Tech.
Maybe you're selling Georgia Tech short.
Well, maybe that too, but.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was shocking.
Yeah, I mean, but just, you know, watching that, when you watch that Clemson-Georgia game from week one, just the eye test showed you Georgia's defense was really good. Clemson's too, but.
And we knew that it would be,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, is that, you know, but how good, and are they championship good? So, but no, I still think you got to play the other guy if you want to win an SEC title.
Look, I mean, you know, this year in college football, you know, we're through 3 weeks or whatever.
Right.
Every team has holes.
Yeah.
You know, you thought Alabama was really good.
Ohio State has them.
Ohio State's got a defensive problem.
Yeah.
And their offense can sputter at times, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got the talent to win most of those games, no question.
Yeah.
UCLA lost after they looked really
good.
Fresno
State.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, Oregon looks really good. Oregon so far may have played the best football of anybody.
Yeah.
Oklahoma struggled in a few games.
Yeah, Nebraska, who's not a very good team, almost beat them. I don't know how good Notre Dame is. I don't.
So they squeak by Toledo, they get by Purdue, and they had to go to overtime against Florida State.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Notre Dame this week has Wisconsin.
Yep.
And then they get Cincinnati next week.
They'll beat Wisconsin.
I think we'll have a better idea of how good Notre Dame is or isn't after this, the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, they'll beat Wisconsin. They're playing them at Soldier Field too, I think, which is cool.
It is. No, that is very cool.
Yeah.
Although it's funny though. So, you know, you're playing Wisconsin Notre Dame and you go to Soldier Field. I think you go down in capacity. You know, these college stadiums are bigger than the NFL stadiums as a rule.
They are, yeah.
I don't know Soldier Field's capacity, but Notre Dame's well over 80,000.
Yeah.
So, I think it's funny when they do that, but it's cool to play in those venues.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I don't know. College football, I mean, it's a little more wide open this year because I actually thought that Alabama they were on their way to curb stomping them, but they did come back, and that was impressive. And like I said, the game comes down to a couple plays and the mixed extra point. Everybody will say, well, if he makes the extra point, but then, you know, Alabama would have had the ball with 3 minutes to go, and they certainly would have, you know, tried to attack and get in the field goal range or score a touchdown or something. So you don't know really how it would have come out, but it was good. On the other hand, and we talked about this, I mean, Florida State's 0-3. I'm not sure who they're going to beat. You know, it's weird. Like, Wake Forest, I mean, back in the day, had Wake Forest beaten Florida State, they would have torn down the goalpost. I'm watching this game on TV, and almost nobody's at Wake Forest watching the game. That's how bad the Florida State brand is these days. And they had a legit chance of beating them, and they did. And not that many people were at Wake watching the game. It was weird. So probably says more about Wake Forest football. But, man, Florida State.
Now they got to play Louisville this week, who just knocked off UCF.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're going to get.
And I know at the end of the you're trying to win the game. But if you're going to do the crazy lateral, you can't let your quarterback get in there.
No, that was bad.
You know, I don't blame the kid. I don't blame whatever. But, you know, you've got to – I mean, that's you know, who knows how long he's out for. What, broken clavicle, I think
broken
it is.
Broken clavicle is like five – if it's not displaced, it's at least 5-6 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad for Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, you're trying to win the game. You can't fault the kid or anything. But, you got to – Tom Brady gets, you know, picked off. You don't see him running very
hard.
He's
not trying to tackle anybody. Nope.
No. No, it's live for the next game, live for the next down, live for the next play.
Yep. That's the secret of Tom Brady. That and making sure you throw touchdown passes on the 1 yard line. What I've learned about Tom in a short period of time is when they get inside the red zone, and when I say inside, I mean like anywhere inside the five, he is not looking to hand that ball off. He is not going to hand that ball off. He's going to throw a tutty to somebody. Somebody's going to get rewarded.
Yeah. Well, he used to quarterback sneak it all the time.
He used to a lot.
Doesn't do that much anymore.
Not as much anymore. But and, of course, I think the guy that's been the biggest recipient has been Mike Evans. I think Mike Evans in the last 2 years has probably had about 8 touchdowns inside of 5 yards. And I don't think I'm exaggerating by much. But, you know, at the one, he caught one for 1 yard and one for 3 yards the other day. And they're almost automatic. I mean, this, you know, it's one thing to throw it up to the guys. Another thing, the guy comes down with it all the time. So why not, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he absolutely, given a choice between running and passing at the one, he's throwing it. He's just going to throw that thing, man. And you think, well, yeah, but the field is so short and it's a disadvantage to the op. No, we're throwing it.
But in his defense, he's never had, like, everyone, you know, rips Pete Carroll for throwing against Malcolm Butler instead of running Marshawn Lynch.
Marshawn Lynch, yeah.
Yeah. You know, but Brady's never had a beast mode in back there either.
No, that's true.
I mean, most of his running backs have been more receivers.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of types of running backs. He's had more of those types than your Bruce. I mean, you know, he's had LeGarrette Blount was there for a little bit. And, you know,
Corey
Dillon,
yeah. Ed Blount.
Dillon was one. But, you know, so in his defense, I mean, you know, generally throwing the ball for him is a better option than running.
You don't trust the greatness of Leonard Fournette or Rojo?
It's not so much trusting it, but, you know, when you've got that arm and that track record and that history and those receivers.
And you got Gronk. I mean, you got Gronk and you got Mike Evans, and that's where most of the balls go.
And you haven't even said Chris Godwin yet.
Or Chris Godwin, yeah, who mossed a guy in the end zone.
Antonio Brown.
Right.
We don't mention him. We don't even talk about O.J. Howard.
O.J. got a catch the other day. Did you see that?
No, I know. But, I mean, you know,
they're holding O.J., but now that's a guy that they are trying to get back into shape and slow play him. Like, they'd like to have him for 17 weeks because they feel like at some point, you know, I mean, Gronk is now becoming that Brady-like character that doesn't seem to age, but at some point you think you're going to need OJ. And, you know, coming off the Achilles, but he looked good, got down the field, caught the ball, you know. I mean, yeah, the OJ, we haven't heard from OJ. We haven't heard from Scotty Miller. You know, Tyler Johnson, I think, got his first target the other day. Cameron Brate, you know, had a few catches in week one. I don't know if he had any last week. So they've got weapons upon weapons. They'll need them all. I mean, it's such a long season. They're all going to get hurt at some point. So that's what wins in this league is depth. You know, you don't want to get attacked at any one position. But, yeah, so.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
All right, and then now our Tampa Bay, your Tampa Bay Rays, I should say, they're not our Tampa Bay Rays, your Tampa Bay Rays, and you do some work for them. They're all but, as we do this podcast, I think assured of winning the AL East, barring some calamity that I don't even know. I guess mathematically it's possible, but what's weird to me is that you could have, what, Boston and Toronto in the wild card and then have to play the winner of those?
If it started today, that would be the scenario. It would be Toronto at Boston, a one-game wild card.
And you believe, if I'm correct, that it would be a better matchup for the Rays to play Toronto than Boston. Why?
There'd be less opposing fans at Tropicana Field for three of those
five games. You're right. You're right about that. If it's the Yankees or the Red Sox,
I think the Rays match up very well against all three of the AL East teams. They're heavy right-handed lineups,
right,
which benefits the Rays.
Right.
You know, for instance, we talked about this, and they're going to face the Blue Jays tonight. We're taping this before Monday night's game, so
yeah,
Shane Boz is going to make his debut. And very curious to see how he pitches.
Yeah,
he's a weapon that could be used in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he'll start or anything, but guy coming out of the bullpen, he's got tremendous stuff. But, you know, they lost 2 of 3 to the Blue Jays last weekend. They gave up a ton of runs in the two losses. But almost all those runs were given up by Michael Wacha and Ryan Yarbrough. Two guys that probably are not going to be in on your playoff roster against those teams.
Yeah.
You know, not say they won't participate in the playoffs at all. I mean, you're going to, you know, you pick your roster each round based on the matchup. But knowing those lineups, I don't think Yarbrough and Wacha are going to face the Yankees, Red Sox, or Blue Jays in the first round of the playoffs. And the rest of your pitching staff did a pretty good job against their right-handed dominated lineup. You know, I think the Rays, the familiarity, the history, the matchup, I think they're comfortable with any one of those three teams.
Yeah.
And how their pitching staff matches up against those lineups. Mm-hmm. And particularly because they know them very well too. And that helps a lot. So,
right.
But if it started today, the Blue Jays and Red Sox, it's Rays' magic number going into tonight is 6 with 12 games to go. Boston and Toronto, Yankees are even closer to eliminate them. 4 is a magic number to eliminate the Yankees from winning the division.
Yeah, which is a combination of Rays wins and or Yankees losses.
Correct. So, correct. So if the Rays beat the Blue Jays tonight and say Boston loses 2, the magic number is now 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because both Boston and Toronto lost, and Tampa Bay would win, so that knocks off 2 games off the number. So
we're getting ever so close to a champagne celebration.
It is.
I think if you win the East, the champagne's involved, right? I mean, that's a big deal.
By the way, we didn't talk about Brett Phillips on Friday night yet.
Oh, God.
How great was that?
Was it any fun or what? Baseball is fun. They're selling the T-shirts now.
Down, 4-1 going to the ninth.
Mm-hmm.
They tie it, go to extras, and then Brett Phillips crushed that ball.
That was a no-doubter, And one of the best bat flip of the year.
Yeah.
Just absolutely launched. I don't think that bat came down.
Yeah, and then right into the airplane wings. And
How about the climbing onto the dugout and hanging on the screen? He went all Jimmy Pearsall. You remember Jimmy Pearsall, Fear Strikes Out?
Yeah.
They did the movie with, like, Anthony Perkins and Carl Malden or something like that. I don't know if it was Anthony, but like some where he just lost his mind. His dad put all this pressure on him, and he, like, hits home run. I thought, what's going on here? What are we doing? But, Brett Phillips, I mean, such a great story to have a local kid play for his hometown team. You can see the joy he plays with anyway, and then putting on that uniform to him is everything, you know what I mean, to be able to play with the Rays.
No one has ever been more excited to play for the Rays than Brett Phillips.
I agree with you. He's already become one of the most, you know, beloved players, and he will never be a superstar. But he's a, you know what? He's a damn good player. Like, he's got like 13 bombs, man.
Mm-hmm.
You hit 13 bombs as a part-time outfielder in Major League Baseball, you're pretty good.
Yeah, and he's not Kevin Kiermaier in the outfield, but he's pretty damn good.
He's got a really good glove. I mean, he'll make plays. He's not only a liability, he's an asset. He makes plays out there. You know, covers a lot of ground, can play any position. So, yeah, I mean, Brett Phillips has been fun to watch, and I love the fact that they've trademarked or whatever they do with this T-shirt that they're selling now. You know, baseball is fun, which is great. But, yeah, good for the local kid. He came up in almost the identical situation the next day, though, and he struck out.
Yeah, well.
So that's baseball. That's baseball.
Just remember, this team's not interesting nor charismatic. So,
no, apparently not. Playoffs will be fun, though. I have no expectations. I don't know who's going to pitch for them. I don't know how they're going to do. I don't know if they're going to score runs the way they've scored them during the regular season. I would think not, but, you know.
Well, you hope Wander Franco's back this week.
He's coming back. Some of the B-roll, I saw him running and doing things. Like he's really close. I think if it weren't the fact that they know they're going to be in the postseason and they know.
Yeah, you can wait an extra day, two, three,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
You don't have. I mean, you want to give them enough swings to get back in a groove before the playoffs.
Before they start, yeah.
But you don't have to rush them back, you know, immediately. You can wait a couple extra days to make sure it's.
Hamstrings are funny. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to go restrain that.
I mean, Nelson Cruz missed a few games. He probably could have come back a day or two sooner, but they can slow play it. They don't have to rush anybody back.
Right, and I think that's what they're doing on the pitching. I think they're managing, you know, innings and saving some arms for October, and you want to play almost in November, so. You know, you got to have those guys as fresh as possible. So I think I hope it's an entertaining postseason for him. And we got the Lightning, the hockey. It's starting up. We're only a few. Are we start playing preseason games here soon?
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, they're going to drop the puck.
They're at Carolina. Camp opens. I think what everyone reports Wednesday this week. First practice is Thursday.
Crazy.
And the prospects. Man. If you don't have anything to do today, the Lightning prospects are playing their final tournament game at the Advent Health Center Ice Center in Wesley Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
They played games Saturday and Sunday. Today they'll play the Panthers prospects. So, so a lot of the players drafted in the last two, three seasons playing each other. It's a way for prospects to kind of play each other and get to know each other before camp opens.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of fun. I was out there. They played at Amalie Arena Saturday. They were at Wesley Chapel on Sunday. I was at both those games. Very entertaining, high-scoring games, lots of offense. So if you like
crazy,
hockey,
man.
And you got anything, you're not busy today, 1 o'clock the Lightning will play the Panthers. So
talk about a short off season, right? I mean, I feel like I was just in Montana around the 4th of July, and that's when they were playing the Stanley Cup Final, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. They're starting the season again. I mean, that was a blink in time.
Yeah, opening night is, 2 weeks from tonight. No, 3 weeks from tonight. I'm sorry, 3 weeks from tonight is opening night.
That's still crazy to me. Wow. I don't know if everybody's had a chance to have the Stanley. Have you had the Stanley Cup yet? You're going to call me over when you get it?
I don't get a day with the Cup, unfortunately.
Are you sure?
Well, have you asked?
I guess
I need to ask. But
that's what I would do. I want a day with a Cup. I want a day with somebody that has it. That must be pretty cool. So,
I mean, yeah, I saw Victor Hedman was eating Swedish meatballs out of it.
There you go.
That's been a popular thing, is what you eat out of the cup.
What you eat and you drink, yes.
Yeah, I mean, like Matthew Joseph was eating poutine out of the cup, which is a Canadian thing, if you're not familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
But what everyone's eating out of the cup has been a big thing this offseason. So has everyone got their cup day? And you know, they had to wait an extra year because they didn't get the cup days last year. So.
Right.
Because of COVID and traveling and that. So
if they win three in a row. It's a different team, but
and Pat Maroon would be four cup guy.
He'd be a four cup guy. Wow, that's incredible.
So I believe three in a row has not happened since the Islanders won three in a row in the early 80s.
Sounds right.
I think there's a team that did like four out of five, but not three in a row. So
right. Oh, well, they're going to be picked again to be various special teams. Look, as long as you have the best defender, the best scorer, and the best goalie, I think you have a shot.
Well, I was talking to Brian Engblom on Saturday about this, and I said we were talking about, you know, the changes in the Lightning and, you know, all, the third line they lost, of course, Gord, Gaudreau, Coleman, losing Tyler Johnson, losing Luke Shen, you know, losing some guys like that. And the guys they brought in, bringing Zach Bogosian back, I like that pickup. Pierre-Edward Belmar, very good face-off guy, real tough to play against guy. Corey Perry, who the Lightning have faced in the Stanley Cup final the last 2 years. But, you know, what we were talking about was, so you've won back-to-back cups. You bring back all your top six forwards. Mm-hmm. Your top two lines are not touched. You essentially bring back your entire defense. David Savard's gone and Luke Shen's gone, but you bring Zach Bogosian in. And you hope Cal Foote makes another step. He played some last year. And you've got the best goalie in the world. You got a shot.
Yeah, why would you expect to not win it? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think penalty kill is going to be very interesting. Because the top two guys over the wall were always, you know, Coleman and Gaudreau. Yanni Gord was the next guy over the line at the boards.
Yeah.
So your top three penalty killers are not on this team anymore. So how they figure out that and who plays with who and who they can trust and go to, I think that's going to be a work in progress early in the season particularly.
Yeah.
The power play is essentially all back. I mean, your top two lines are back. So, you know, it's really just – I think it's managing the mental part of it of this was a – everyone talked last year it was a short off season. If you look calendar-wise, it wasn't. It may have been a couple weeks longer.
This one is the short one.
But it felt like it was shorter because going into December, we didn't know what was going to happen. And all of a sudden, mid-December, it was like, okay, camp starts in 2 weeks and the season starts in four.
Right.
And it just felt like it came on you quick, even though you hadn't played in several months. This one is truly a month shorter than a typical offseason.
Yeah.
And there's the physical part of it, but I think it's the mental part of it, too.
Right.
Of, you know, how they adapt to that and play an 82-game schedule. Now, I think there's some, you know, exciting things like you're playing every team again. Mm-hmm. You know, last year you played the same team eight times in the regular season.
And you're playing in full arenas.
Yeah, you're going to play in full arenas now. Yeah. So, you know, I think there'll be some things that kind of rejuvenate a team too. As, you know, hey, we get to go back to Boston or you know, get to go to Toronto or...
Yeah, because that's a mental grind too, playing the same team over and over again.
Absolutely. So, but yeah, we're 3 weeks from opening night when they'll raise the banner against the Penguins at Amalie Arena.
That's pretty cool. Well, we'll be following the Rays, of course, in their series against Toronto. The Bucks will be back to work on Wednesday preparing for their game against the Los Angeles Rams. That's going to be a fun one with Matthew Stafford and all the guys, and so we'll have all of that you can check out in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. And we're going to have our mailbag segment, right, tomorrow?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do a mailbag tomorrow. That'd be great.
Yeah, so I'm sure you guys got lots of questions about the Bucks, not just on Ronald Jones or Richard Sherman, but bring us anything, whether it's on the Bucks, the Rays, college football, all of that. We'll have Matt Baker later this week to talk a little college football and what he saw at Florida and Alabama and so on. Get into his top 25 poll. So keep it right here. We're here every Monday through Friday on Sports Day Tampa Bay. Thanks for listening. You can send those mailbag questions to us on Twitter at Sports Day TV. You can send it to me on Twitter at NFL Stroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.